You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk.
Technobite with Aki Anastasio.
How's it? How are you, CBS? Did you have a nice weekend?
I did, and I've got a new toy. How do you like it? Do you want to see it?
Oh, look at that. You've got the new Galaxy S9.
Yeah, I'm loving it, especially the camera. It's quite cool. This is the 9 Plus.
Yes.
And I wish people who work at some of these stores where we pay lots of money can have better, what do they call it, product knowledge.
Yes.
I said to her, like, what's the difference between S9 and 9 Plus?
And, no, there's a massive difference.
And she said the Plus is bigger, and that was the only difference. My partner then got the S9. I got the Plus. We know the difference is 3,000. And I said, you know what? I almost called you, but I didn't want to be that guy. Embarrass her and also to show off that I know Aki. Because I said, Aki will tell me the functional difference. So tell me why I paid 3,000 Rand more.
I'm going to review it next week. So you'll have to wait for next week.
But I'll wait
until next week. There are some differences, not massive differences, but personally, I would go for the Plus. It's my device of choice. But
I'm loving it. It's just very big compared to the previous one I had.
Yeah.
So not having Greek hands, it's taking a while to get used to it.
You really have a knack of making me blush, don't you? But no, you're going to love that camera. You should play around with the slow-mo part of that camera. But
I haven't yet. I've seen the features. Yeah,
I think it's possibly the best device in the world.
Cool beans. Now we've got three fantastic stories this week. We're going to start firstly with artificial intelligence. Aki always picks things that intersects his interest and mine. And you're right. You know, we take for granted that algorithms are objective, but someone has to make value judgments about what goes into coding
and who writes them exactly. And it's a big issue because, you know, right now they're working on artificial intelligence that can really scan patients as they arrive into hospitals, and really help doctors in making that right judgment in what medication they need to give them, where they need to go. In fact, AI, they did a recent survey in Boston and, at Stanford University, excuse me. And they looked at 650,000 hospital patient records, and they basically identified, they're able to identify from those patients who is risk of needing intensive care. In Boston, for example, they've got this specific algorithm that can, using the data that they've got, once you arrive into intensive care, they can tell you when you're going to die based on the data that they've got already. So this is where healthcare is going. But the problem is, as you correctly said, is that the people that are writing those, the coding, for example, they're already writing coding for to help judges make sentencing decisions and whether predicting if criminals will commit more crimes, for example. And the differences in these biases with healthcare is no different. So I'll give you an example. When there's profit motives for healthcare outcomes, what does the AI do? What if the algorithm is designed around the goal of saving money, for example? What if it's different treatment decisions based on what the patient's insurance status is, for example, and their ability to pay, for example? So all of that data goes into the algorithms, and, you know, if they have access to, say, Discovery's database, for example, and Discovery's using the algorithm, they can say, well, Eusebius has run out of funds, we've checked his credit score, it's unlikely that we'll get the money back from him eventually, so let's give preference to somebody else who we guaranteed of getting the money.
There's so much that came to my mind. I'm going to have to do a full show on the ethics of AI based on that article you shared with me and these insights. I wonder whether we will resist and then eventually be grateful that we actually have more accurate basis for making predictive decisions. So, for example, as that piece that you shared with me, Aki, points out, when it comes to prison sentences, imagine, for example, we can, with some degree of accuracy, predict that Marva is not capable psychologically of being rehabilitated, and then take that into account in what kind of sentence you impose on him.
Correct.
Now, with things like cricket, for example, we resisted using technology, and we're like, oh, no, there's something really cool about letting a human make an imperfect judgment call on the field.
Exactly.
And now we're at the point where we go, you know what, if it's going to give us more accurate decisions, in the interest of fairness, let's stop romanticizing human judgment when it's not accurate.
Exactly. And that's
a great thing to weigh up.
It's a great example. And unfortunately, if you look at it from an outside point of view, the positives outweigh the negatives.
Yeah.
And even we are making a biased decision on that, even though we know what the positives and the negatives are. Yeah. Now, talking about AI and talking about how we go around. Now, you don't drive, right? Because you use Uber and your Uber Chronicles.
I don't,
are fantastic.
But I've got a million and one apps on here.
Yes.
And our next story isn't just about traffic; it is also about just how do we get the most optimal behavior in groups.
Yes. Well, exactly this. And you know, in the past, and I grew up in an era where we pulled out a MacBook and I used the MacBook to guide me to different yeah. locations. Now, we don't use MacBooks because there's an app on the phone, whether you're using Waves, whether you're using Google Maps or Apple Maps, you know, there's a host of different kind of apps that you put in your location, and it looks at the data that's out there, and the more data they have, the more accurate it is to give you an outcome of which is the best possible route to go where you're going. But now, this new research that's come out is saying that there's actually a bit of a problem over here, because the technology that is taking people off the main highways or whatever route they're using on alternative routes is now causing problems in urban areas, because it's, you know, the maps are now sending people along different routes, and also the different apps don't talk to each other. So it's messing up with entire planning of cities and how they've been optimized to deal with traffic. And this is now becoming a major, major issue for many American cities, where people are using these different apps to guide around accident scenes to find the quickest location from A to B. But they're saying the apps don't share the information with each other all the time, and it's now driving people off into these urban areas, and traffic planners are re-looking at how technology is impacting traffic going into these big cities, and how these mobile mapping apps are impacting their decisions and their planning in the future.
Look, I just think this is very cool for you data junkies, because every, at least once a month, you bang on about how amazing it is that we have more and more data with which to make decisions in the world, as long as you can obviously become quite, you know, agile in how you access and understand the data if you are into data journalism or just a data expert.
Yes.
But this story, another takeaway from this story is that sometimes too much data can actually cause anarchy.
Yeah, indeed. And you're hearing a lot of people complaining that live in these quiet suburbs, that traffic is diverted now into their streets, which wasn't the case before. And even today, I still see it today, you know, people are like sheep. They follow a certain, you know, a certain route that's guaranteed to get them from A to B. But, those side streets are now becoming really congested, and it's becoming a big issue.
Okay, and then we've got one more story left, which is another very cool story, hot on the heels of our focus on science fiction in the Literature Corner on Thursday. The idea of multiverses always seemed to be a possibility for either really mad scientists like Stephen Hawking or for people with overactive imaginations.
No, he's an astonishing guy. We lost somebody who was very special to the scientific community. And interesting,
if he was as amazing as Albert Einstein, like people are saying, why didn't he get the Nobel Prize?
Do you know why he didn't get the Nobel Prize? Because the Nobel Prize is given to people who have whose theories have been proven.
So
Hawking, for example, didn't ever get a Nobel Prize because, unlike quantum mechanics, it's quite straightforward. Now, theoretical scientific discoveries have to be confirmed by observational data, is what it says on their website, and only once it's been proven do they give out the Nobel Prize. So it's kind of difficult to prove a black hole, as Hawking has done in his previous life. In fact, if you look at Albert Einstein, who did get a Nobel early in his life, but the one about gravitational waves in space, when he first proposed it in 1920, they only discovered that in 2016 that his theory was actually true, because we had enough computing power to prove that kind of thing. But of course, he has now died. But interestingly, Hawking died on 14 March. It was the day that Einstein was born.
That's right. I saw that.
I found it quite interesting. So, but he had a very funny sense of humor. And just a few weeks before he died, in fact, he released another bit of research from his deathbed, according to his co-author, Professor Thomas Hertog. And, it's all about a Star Trek style space probe to find experimental evidence for the existence of a multi-universe, which is quite extraordinary what this guy was working on his deathbed. But he also had a great sense of humor. And I've got two different clips. This one is from some advice that he gives, and he gives some wonderful advice to people and about love. Listen to this.
Here are the most important pieces of advice that I've passed on to my children. 1. Remember to look up at the stars and not down at your feet. 2. Never give up work. Work gives you meaning and purpose, and life is empty without it. 3. If you are lucky enough to find love, remember it is rare and don't throw it away.
Good advice. That is lovely. And the very funny piece that I really enjoyed was when he made an appearance on the Big Bang Theory, where Sheldon had, you know, one of his colleagues had organized
Sheldon Marais.
No, not Sheldon Marais. He will never ever appear on Big Bang Theory or write any kind of thesis of this nature. He's good at other things. But, he, you know, when Sheldon met Stephen Hawking and gave him his paper, this is how that piece went in the Big Bang Theory. It's quite funny.
Professor Hawking, it's an honor and a privilege to meet you, sir.
I know.
I want to thank you for taking time to see me.
My pleasure. I enjoyed reading your paper very much. You clearly have a brilliant mind.
I know.
Your thesis that the Higgs boson is a black hole, accelerating backwards through time, is fascinating.
Well, thank you. It came to me one morning in the shower.
That's nice. Too bad it's wrong.
What do you mean, wrong?
You made an arithmetic mistake on page 2. It was quite a boner.
No, but that can't be right. I don't make arithmetic mistakes.
Are you saying I do?
Oh, no, of course.
Love it.
Beautiful. You see this? Have a beautiful week.
You too, Aki.